Welcome to Canine Hijinks, the podcast for those who want to explore more ways to have fun with their dogs and perhaps discover the wider world of training and dog sports. It may even convert the casual pet owner into a dog sport enthusiast. Join me, Alyssa Looney.
And me, Whitney Taylor, as we share our dog training journeys, as well as resources you can use to enhance your life with your canine friends.
Welcome to Canine Hijinks. Thanks for joining us for another episode. You have Whitney and I today, and we're back from a long break because we took a big trip. Where did we go, Whitney?
We went to West Coast Open. Whoop, whoop.
West Coast Open. It's UKI. UK International Agility hosted a big open event, which meant you didn't have to qualify to enter. Anybody could enter. And we went down to California, about the middle of California, I suppose, and competed for 4 days.
Four days. It was a long trial.
It was 4 days. The courses were fantastic. Both had achievements in our own ways, and we thought it would be a good opportunity to talk about what it was like, how it went, the kind of differences in that kind of atmosphere versus a regular local trial, and that kind of thing.
Yeah. So I will say this episode is coming about a week later than we expected. I've been like full of the drama lately, Alyssa, which I don't entirely appreciate for myself. So one, prior to going to West Coast Open, I had to buy a new car. I literally, like, my Jeep died on the highway. It overheated. The next day, I had to go buy a new car or I would not make it to the Pacific Northwest Classic. Also, I was the one doing the driving down to California. So I now have a Toyota 4Runner. I bought it with 750 miles on it. I have not made my first payment, and it now has 4,000 miles on it, so I have put it to good use. And so then on top of that, we were going to record this follow-up episode, and there was a wildfire in my area, and we got some east winds. And so a week ago today, I was leaving a local agility trial with like runs left. I had to evacuate my home. We went down to my dad's house. That's only like 15 minutes away, thankfully. But like we loaded up it's a very interesting life experience to load up your car thinking that you might never see your home again, what you value versus what you don't. So we spent a week at my dad's house. The evacuation orders were lifted like the next day and looked pretty good. But the smoke, because we live essentially up a hill, the fire is kind of at like the top of the hill. My dad's much further down the hill. The air quality was much better at my dad's house. So between that and I will just say flat out laziness, I needed to make dinner on Thursday night. And then I was like, they'd have lifted all evacuation orders. And so we could have gone home Thursday night, but it was like 8 o'clock and all my stuff was there and I had meetings early in the morning. So I felt kind of bad. People were like, have you gone home yet? And I'm like, well, no, but not for like any good reason. There's no danger anymore. So at any rate, we are now here. I really hope the next several weeks of my life, like the main drama is how far along I feel like I get on my running dog walk, even though there's 13 days of rain predicted. So not sure how many outdoor training sessions I'm going to get. So now that I've talked about all of my drama, Alyssa, what have you been up to for the last week or so, especially with your dogs?
Well, I mean, I feel like I've had plenty of drama, and maybe I'm taking, you pass the baton to me because I have two limping dogs.
What?
Now, including my puppy. Ale just has a torn paw pad. That one's not a big deal, and I know what it is. Leo, on the other hand, he just turned 6 months. It's been a while since we've updated about Leo. He's a giant. He's about 40 pounds and I'm guessing about 21 inches tall. So he's a big, gangly, not very coordinated guy who looks sort of like an adult dog, but definitely doesn't act like one yet. and really he's doing quite good in a lot of ways, but he is definitely limping today. The last couple of weeks I've been thinking I'm being paranoid. Like, was that an off step? was that an off step? Was he limping just there? Is that an off step? And, you know, because of my history with Jet in particular, I get really worried about stuff like that. And I feel like I get pretty paranoid about whether my dogs are limping or not. Yeah, well, he's definitely limping now. So I will be calling the vet tomorrow to make an appointment and get x-rays because we'll see. I suspect.
You can't find probably anything.
I can't find anything. It's definitely nothing like in his paw that I can find. And the sort of intermittent nature of it until now makes me worry about like pano or OCD or something like that. Yeah. So it's highly possible that the members of the Puppy Papers are going to get to see our journey through rehab. We'll see.
No, I say no.
I know. I hope not. But, you know, in either case, they're not the worst thing in the world. Yeah. So it'll be okay. But yeah. And before the West Coast Open, I was actually supposed to travel for like 2 weeks straight. I flew to Chicago the week prior. While I was in Chicago, I got, I think the flu, it wasn't COVID because I tested about 5 times and once with the doctor. Didn't have COVID, but I ended up being pretty sick for the West Coast Open. And so in addition to it being this big event with these big, huge courses and all of that, I
didn't feel 100%.
I didn't feel 100% for sure. And I was walking around the rings with lots of Kleenex and, you know, chapstick and that kind of thing. But at least I'm healthy now. So there's that. Yeah. So I hope also that life calms down a little bit in these next few months. And I don't have any big competitions set up for Ole because we have a couple of big pieces of our training that I want to fix before we're really competing again. Her dog walk and her weaves mostly. Mm-hmm. But
I feel that.
Other than that, we're just all about getting healthy around here. All right. Well, enough drama, Whitney. Enough Let's talk drama. About the fun that was
the UKI West Coast Open.
West Coast Open.
You bet.
A little summary. It was at a horse park in Paso Robles.
Yep.
We drove down. We all got there kind of the day before. There were 4 of us traveling in our group. Mm-hmm. And it was a different setup because you ran 4 courses per day, essentially. Mm-hmm. And you had to walk all 4 courses first thing in the morning.
Right. Which is
literally at like 7 a.m.
Yeah. And I don't think that is uncommon for national events. It was something I experienced the one time I attended Cena Sport. I like keep that walkthrough schedule that I had on a little post-it note because it was all special to me. But yeah, so there was this like rotation that you would walk. Well, so was it 4 courses, but there were 5 walkthroughs because there were 4 groups with an off group. So there were 5 walkthroughs and there was 1 walkthrough where you weren't walking.
There were 5 groups and 4 courses.
Yes.
So yes, one group was always off. Per course walk.
Correct.
So we were actually in different groups.
Yep.
But you rotated through with the same group and you were in the same group all weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of rotated through. So you had to walk all 4 courses. You had 8 minutes to walk each course in the morning per your group rotation.
Yep.
And then you ran sometime between.
I was going to say, and importantly, there was time in between the walkthroughs because the very first day I thought I was really smart and I was like, okay, I got this course and I headed over to my next course. And when they beeped for the walkthrough to finish, I was like, cool, I can immediately start the walkthrough and I'm the only one here. No. And I was thinking I was really smart. No, I was cheating.
Yeah, that's what I was doing. Yeah, they had like 3 minutes or something in between.
In between, because so this place was huge. Huge. Yeah, so
it was a long way. Like
this whole kind of quadrant setup. And so there were 2 courses kind of side by side, but then the 2 groups of 2 courses, there was a whole nother course worth of field in between, which ended up being important. There were a lot of people kind of spectating from that area and not like crating.
The practice jumps were in there.
Yeah, and the practice jumps were there. So you needed
and
the
you can
time.
Let your dogs off leash. So like I tossed the ball a few times in between runs, like after we finished our runs, I would go there because it was kind of the closest green space and you're allowed to have your dog off leash in UKI. So
could go do that. Like there was so much space between the courses. You were not necessarily distracting the dog in the ring, in any of the rings by being off leash there because it was a huge amount of space.
It was
so
big.
There was a lot of walking. And that was an interesting thing to observe. I felt like the seasoned competitors, not to like jump ahead, but like one had backpacks or bags specifically where they were toting all their dog stuff, right? So like toys and water bowls and all that. They like they knew they were going to have this huge space that they needed to tote around in, and or bicycles, like fair number of bicycles that people were using to ride around and that their dogs were used to sort of traveling with them on. So like that was an interesting aspect, that things were very well timed, and that but the courses were really far apart, and there was time planning for that fact in the walkthroughs, that you were wasn't just like you ended a walkthrough and you started a walkthrough. There was this like travel time in between, which was sort of wild for me when you're thinking about like your normal local with two rings. There's not like travel time between the rings, so that was definitely different.
Yes, it was. And so then you ran in the same rotation that you walked the courses, you then rotated through running the courses. And so basically we ran any time between 8:30 and 4 or 5 o'clock pretty much was kind of the end of the day, except for the last couple of days went a little longer because I had some finals runs. But so it was pretty long span from morning to evening when you ran, and somewhere in there you had a gap because your rotation was off. And so ideally you were helping in the rings. Helping in the rings when your rotation was off. And I only had one dog, which made it pretty easy to keep track of my schedule and where I was supposed to be. A lot of people had multiple dogs. And if you had multiple dogs, you were still running in the same group each time. And so some people had, you know, plenty of time between their dogs, and some people, they were quite close together. UKI has a nice rule that if you have two dogs in a class, you have a minimum of 5 minutes between your turns. And so if you had two dogs, you had that 5 minutes to put one away, where you could do temporary crating in case you had that scenario.
Yeah. And it, interesting, because it really depended on what class you were running in. So the 16-inch class had, I want to say 20 dogs, something like that. Whereas the
20 in your group.
No, I think total running versus the 20-inch class had somewhere 117 or 118 dogs total. So there's this huge difference. And it was interesting how the dogs weren't necessarily split super evenly between classes. So like the 24-inch class had 50-ish dogs. That sounds about right. And there was this one group that had like 12 or 20, it seemed like, of the 24-inch dogs, and then a bunch of the other groups only had, you know, 2 to 6 to 10, so like very few 24-inch dogs. So really dependent on what group you were in, how much space you might have between your dogs. So definitely running multiple dogs runs a whole extra layer. I ran the Pacific Northwest Classic, so that's also UKI. I want to say 2 weekends before the open that I had to buy the car to get to. And I was running both dogs. I was running both Fractal and Sprite. They, I chose to enter both dogs because they were having a lot of titling events offered, even though it was a classic with all of these kind of tournament things. And Fractal really needed to get out of, I always forget, novice, beginners, whatever, because they have 4 levels in UKI, novice, beginner, senior, champ. And he had never managed to make it out of the novice class. And so I was like, all right, this will be a good chance. I was not necessarily like entering it for the tournament stuff for him. And he ended up performing really well. But my largest takeaway from that was that like running two dogs was hard. It wasn't a super tiny class, but there were also groups. And so I think maybe there were a total of 10, 20-inch dogs, and both Fractal and Sprite run 20 inches in UKI. And so I didn't have a lot of time between dogs, and I was like huffing and puffing, and it ended up being a cardio workout more than what I expected. And it was, And really, the other thing that is different about UKI than some other venues, and particularly in the tournament classes, is that you cannot run out of order. And so, like, you get the 5 minutes more than you can get anything else. And so there was one, and it's like 5 dogs or 5 minutes, something like that. And so there was this one course where
I think it's 10 dogs or 5 minutes.
Maybe that's what, see, and I, and that was
something
a good,
like that.
That was a good lesson for me. Like, I think I needed to take advantage of that time, and that I didn't, because I didn't fully understand the rules. So I like found somebody to hold my dog, so that, because that was basically like, I didn't, the crating area was super close, but I didn't even feel like I had time for that. So there was somebody like standing outside of the ring so that I could just have a couple of dogs between and go run the other dog. So that running multiple dogs adds a whole extra layer to everything. So I think if that's something that you're wanting to do, you definitely, definitely have to have a plan, really understand the rules, and like, do not feel bad about taking advantage of them if that is what you need. Especially these courses are big, they're making you run. And so you need to have the time to catch your breath. You've paid your entry, and each dog deserves their own due. So that's my plug for, like, if you're running multiple dogs, make sure that you understand the rules and take advantage and get as much time between dogs as you can.
That, I don't know how, well, granted, I was sick and, you know, really super congested for the West Coast Open, but there's no way I would have had enough energy to do 2 dogs. Just those courses were huge, and you had to sprint a lot and needed really good obstacle commitment. And Ale's pretty young. And so even though her obstacle commitment has improved a ton in this last 6 months, mm-hmm. It wasn't quite enough for some of these big giant courses, but also, you know, we don't necessarily run smoothly through them all. So I end up having to stop and restart on occasion with her still. And whew, I can't imagine running 2 dogs because those courses were big.
Yeah. And I don't, the classic courses weren't like quite as big in the
same way. They were 100 by 100.
Right.
They were 100 by 100. And the course size at West Coast Open, I think, was 130 by 140.
Right.
And so it was a huge difference.
But I think if we looked at the yardage on the courses, that we had a couple of judges at the Pacific Northwest Classic. So we had Ashley Deacon and Rachel Downs, and they know how to design a course, man.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were,
they had yardage, but
they had yardage. They were over 200. And so that was the thing.
It would be interesting to compare.
Yeah, look at the average,
the course
yardage.
Lengths.
Because mm-hmm. I found that, like, whichever dog I ran second at the Classic, I did not do as good of a job with. And
yeah,
Sprite has skills, but she ran second most of the time, like, for whatever reason at the Classic. And she did not make pentathlon finals. Fractal did, and did well. And I was extra pleased with him, but like, that was a fascinating learning experience for me, that like, I couldn't run both dogs sort of back to back, if you will. There was a point at which it was like one of those teeter tire tunnel things, and I'm like, I'm saying completely the wrong word, my brain is so scrambled, I don't even know what obstacle I'm trying to cue my dog to do. And that was my, like, wow, this is really unfair to the second dog running. So like, not only do you have to make your plan to kind of take advantage of the rules and to understand the situation, like, you're gonna have to plan your fitness to be able to mm-hmm. run multiple dogs. So just, like, you know, buyer beware.
Yes, I loved the courses at UKI, but I was definitely finding that I wish I was in better physical condition. And I don't know how much I still would have felt that way if I hadn't been sick while I was there.
Hard,
right. I'm sure
really
that played a part.
So I would say overall, the kind of things about the event, this was the first time they've done the West Coast Open, the first time I've been to a UKI national event. We went to 2 regional mm-hmm. events this year because we went down to Utah and then to the Pacific Northwest Classic. And mm-hmm. the thing I have to say is I was absolutely impressed by the professionalism of the event, even over and above mm-hmm. kind of when I attended Cena Sport. This yep. was absolutely intense. There were people, they, every single time they said that the, you know, running would start at 9:18, it started at 9:18, not at 9:19, yep. Not at 9:20, not at 9:17. They absolutely ran the event like clockwork. There was an app. I was mm-hmm. thankful for my Apple Watch that would give me updates because things did change. They were really trying to like maximize time. We found out that like apparently Paso Robles, like still don't know where it is. I'm terrible at directions. I just drove till the GPS told me I was there. So, but apparently it's like 30 minutes from the coast. And so there's like mm-hmm. ocean winds that you get. And they were really trying to get some stuff done earlier in the day. So it's not to say that nothing changed, but if you had the app, like they were really on it, they said this is when it's going to start and that's when it started and they moved stuff. They always allowed the amount of time that they said they were going to allow. It was just absolutely impeccable. And additionally, the thing that I think folks don't often take the time for, even like at local events, was lunch. And so that there was like mm-hmm. lunchtime, the judges got lunch. There was a food vendor on site that had, I thought, really good options at decent
good food.
Prices.
Yep.
Which makes a huge difference as a competitor. Like it was mm-hmm. hot. And so the idea of trying to like have a cooler that would keep stuff at a reasonable temperature so that you could have protein in the middle of the day. Like that was a stress that like we didn't have. I was happy to hand over my card and get fruit and a chicken salad sandwich and whatever that frozen lemonade thing was that other people really liked that I didn't get. Like that was a really big deal to me that was available and that they took lunch time. So it was like, in addition to the fact that there was always a group off that could be working, there was lunch time. So it wasn't mm-hmm. like you had to sacrifice your lunch if you wanted to work during your group's off time. So that was something I was really impressed with. Makes me really excited to go back to more UKI events, that it was run so professionally and so seamlessly in that case.
Yeah, the technology that they have. An agility gate, so you knew which dog was in the ring mm-hmm. at what time, and then the other app that they had with all the announcements in it made mm-hmm. it super easy to know where you were supposed to be and when, and if anything changed, you had notification right away. The rings were laid out really nicely, and yeah, they started on time and they kept things moving, and it was great. It was super fun. I would 100% go back a million times over.
Yeah.
Great courses.
They finally put up the schedule for next year. And so
I know
it's on my calendar. I will say what we're hoping for is competitors, the single gripe about the whole thing, like the surface was great. The footing was great. The stalls worked out. There, sort of like there was a food vendor, there were bathrooms,
there's plenty of parking,
all of that stuff. Yep. That was great. Shade, there was not enough shade. Single biggest torture piece was like, so we had this absolutely hilarious, I don't know, it was only like the second day, and our friend Allison had like a beach umbrella, so that ended up being like the thing to have, was the beach umbrella, because you were not allowed to put up shade tents at all anywhere mm-hmm. on the property, but apparently you could have a beach umbrella that like staked into the ground. So Allison had a beach umbrella, I had this like travel triangle chair ridiculous thing that I was dragging. Linda had a wagon that we were using to like throw treats and toys and kind of water, whatever random stuff in. And so there were four people huddled under a single beach umbrella trying to find some shade. And like, because we were basically all in the 20-inch class, we had time at the end. Oftentimes we would like bleed off of our group to go watch at the next course that we were going to have to run. And sometimes that meant we got mm-hmm. to watch you, which was really nice. And so we're all like huddled under this thing. We rotated who got to sit in the chair versus on the ground, because the only shade that they had was supposed to be for the people like directly going into the ring. So there was not a good way to spectate. It was just like, it was so frustrating for how well run the event was, that this was this like huge oversight. And eventually they finally allowed some more shade tents for competitors getting ready to go into the ring, because that was also really hard. That wasn't necessarily the same space as the temporary crating space. And so I had that struggle. Like, Sprite gets hot, and she did fairly well. And I took her to what I called the humiliation station a lot, which is to wet her down, which she thinks was awful. But I'd rather have her be a little sad about that than overheated. And so all of these people are trying to be good competitors and be ready to go into the ring, but there's nowhere for their dogs to go that's not standing. Like, it was 95 degrees outside. We're not talking about like a little bit of heat. It was very, very hot. So I would say that was the one gripe on an otherwise flawless event.
Really fun event. And Paso Robles is a cool little town with lots of good restaurants.
So Dude, the food center around the little park area, other than parking being like a little bit difficult, man, you could stay there for like a week. And there were like fancy French wine tasting type restaurants that I was like, I'm not dressed for this. Maybe next time I will bring some halfway acceptable clothes that I could pretend to be clean in. You know, like, usually my pretend to be clean is like ball cap with messy bun in the back. That wasn't going to probably cut it at these, I don't know, $30 plate restaurants. But I always wonder if California is as laid back as the sort of Portland area is, right? Because dude, in Portland, they'll serve you kind of no matter what. But it was a fun place to go. And I would have loved to have kind of an extra day where I was clean and showered and all of that to go to one of those fun restaurants.
Yeah, it was a really cool trip. And I'm really excited to go back next year for sure.
Yeah. So Alyssa, why don't you tell us about kind of what were your goals going into the event? What did you experience? How did you handle kind of the, what was your sort of mental journey throughout that and all of your planning? And how did you end up feeling about the event at the end?
So I didn't have a ton of like performance related goals. I definitely wasn't going expecting to win anything. Ale just turned two, I think a couple weeks before the event. So she's still really young. And I knew that we were going to have trouble with our weaves and our dog walk. That was just, we'd been struggling with those and I knew that was going to be a problem. So that was obviously going to keep us out of the running for some things. And then of course I got so sick that I think my goal was to stay on my feet and like survive each course, right? Yeah. Especially the first day. The first day was kind of a doozy. I came out of it really proud of a few things. One is her improvement from at this trial as compared to when we went to the regional in April was huge. I mean, somebody who saw us at both events said she's a completely different dog at this point. Like, she's improved that much because she really has. So her commitment to the obstacles was so much better. She's sending a lot better. She's really looking for things kind of out in front or out at a distance. So I was able to get a little more distance than I have previously. So I was super happy with that. I was also really pleased with her mental game. She broke her start line once all weekend, and it was a longer lead out than I'd asked for any other time. And so I think there was a little bit of a miscommunication, but otherwise she had great start lines. She also only broke her teeter once. And I literally think she thought it was the dog walk. A lot of dogs did it in that particular spot. And otherwise her teeters were great. So some of those things that have been questionable, not so much her start line. She's usually got a pretty good start line, but like her teeter has been something we've struggled with a tiny bit in competition. That was so much better. She didn't knock a ton of bars, which was also great, but we did struggle with the dog walk and the weaves, which we expected. But her mental state, I was so happy with, because it was so hard to time when we should get to the ring so that we weren't having to sit there for forever.
Well, especially the further away rings, that was kind of impossible.
Yeah. And occasionally there were technology glitches, right? So you'd be like, oh, I think I got it timed right. And then something would, a timer would go off in the sun or whatever. And, and you'd have to wait. I also had a couple times where they were having a little bit of trouble with the scoring software, I think, where we ended up having to stand on the start line for quite a while. And Jet, I would have been able to do that. It would have ruined the whole run, right? But she was able to watch other dogs. She was able to hang out outside the ring. She wasn't, you know, noisy or anything watching other dogs.
Right.
And she still had her brain on, even if we'd sat there and watched 20 dogs, she was totally fine. And so that kind of stuff was so cool to have happen with a dog like her, who gets pretty amped up. I really felt like she kept her brain intact the whole weekend and was really working hard. And so the things that went wrong were training issues. They weren't as a result of the environment or whatever. It's just where we are in our journey. So she was a really good traveler. She had to fly for the first time on our way down there. That's kind of another long story. And we ended up having to fly to get down there, that kind of thing. So I was just overall really pleased, especially with how young she is, for what we did improve upon and what we maintained. Definitely have some homework for next year, but that's how it went for me. I was really pleased. And by the last day, I wasn't even that sick anymore. So that was good.
It was like extra bonus. Yeah, I actually feel good.
But sort of bigger surprises for the weekend, Whitney. How did you and Sprite go?
So I went in with no expectations for this event. This is her first national event. She's not that much older than Ollie. She's 2.5. She had done well in Utah, which was a surprise, but I figured a lot an anomaly. And so I was just excited to see how we did. So I went into the first day of competition. I had one thing that definitely impacted my weekend that I want to give credit to, is that towards the end of the time when I was training with Daisy Peel, she had gotten back from Germany, I think it was, that she had gone to, and was pushing us in class in a different way than she had normally, because I had Sprite in her class, which was like this like high level competition class. She really didn't belong there, but it was the class I'd been in. She was the only dog I had. Fractal was still injured. And I was just like, this is over our head. I don't know what to do here. And she pushed me and said, if this is the competition course that you were faced with and you had to cue, you wanted the cue, like, how would you handle it? Think of it that way, approach it that way, go for it. And I was like, oh, okay. Because mostly in class, she had always pushed us to handle it the way that you don't think you can, because you're in class. And like, the thing that you should be doing in class is to push your skills and to work through things and break some things down in a way that you don't think you could do. So it was sort of new for me, but ended up being really, really helpful at this event. So one of our weaker skills that I knew going in was our threadle. And I had specifically worked it going into the event, knowing that we would need it. We had kind of been blessed, I feel like, in Utah, that there were not a lot of places where we, like, the threadle was your only choice. I could mostly do a side change and make it a backside instead of a threadle.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew at this event, like, there were going to be places where that was just not an option. So I had really worked it. And I was like, that was one of the tests that we were going to go into. I'm like, I'm going to have to use our threadle. On the first day, we came out pretty good. I was happy. I don't know. She like knocked one bar, didn't eat anything. The other thing was like, I had paid zero attention to what any of the events were at this thing. I knew there was a pentathlon, which was 5 runs total. Yeah, turns out there were like these 4 or 5 different events. I like no clue. Absolutely no clue. Mm-hmm. I had this like one buy. I didn't even know what the buy was for. But because I had no expectations, I wasn't paying attention to any of that, right? Like it wasn't like, oh, this is the buy and I have this, and so I need to run this run versus that run. Like I just had none of that. All I was doing was going out there and doing the best we could on any particular course with the skills that we had. So I was really pleased with how we performed on the first day. We were running in a crowd of apparently 117 dogs. And so I looked at our results. There was something called winners take all jumping, which I was like, okay, so I guess this is like a one and done thing. And we got through it clean and we placed 8th. And I was like, wow, that's pretty good. Way to go, Sprite. Like, she's not the fastest dog out there. She's more of like a 6 yard per second dog. She's not a 7 yard per second dog yet. So I was like, that's cool. Yay. We did good. So we went into the second day and kind of did the same thing and felt like we did well. We think we eat on something that day. But we had run then at that point three of the five pentathlon courses. And so I was like, oh, I don't think we eat. I should check the pentathlon standings because we should be in the top 20. And so I look and we were in third place. And I was like, oh my God, what? I'm still just like, how? 117 dogs and she was in third place. And so something I've realized is that, like, wow, staying on course is really important. Right. Like if you can, she's not the fastest. Like I'm really, people are going to sort of pick on me, but like, she's not the fastest dog. Not yet. I will say that. That's fine. But like at that event, what Juliana Munden and Fusion were doing was like a far cry above what Sprite and I were doing from a speed perspective. But interestingly, the courses were hard enough that people just weren't staying on course. And so we were being in that particular event, being really highly rewarded for staying on course. And so I looked at that and then I was like, well, now the pressure's on. And so we had this other, you know, our fourth pentathlon course to run before we were seated for finals. And so it was just kind of a different day, that third day. All of a sudden there was sort of like some pressure there. And so it was really different to get through and to think about. And I think I did well at that event was to mentally visualize the course. That's something that gets more and more important when you have a lot more time between when you run, when you walk the course and when you run the course. You have to kind of constantly re-visualize. Do I know where my dog will be when I execute this move? Do I know exactly where I will position this turn? How close will I be to the jump? All of those things become more and more important in these types of events. And so we didn't have a great, whatever that run was. I don't know. We had like two faults, but we managed to, again, not E.
Right.
And interestingly, it was the first agility course. So that was the end of the second or third day. There was a threadle that was like eating teams alive, absolutely eating them alive. It was tunnel jump threadle. And so dogs were coming in so much speed. And then what was happening is even if teams got the threadle, they were getting like a refusal or somehow an off course at the next jump.
Then there was a send.
Because there was a send. And so if you really like hunkered down and decelled to get the threadle, then you couldn't get the send. And so that was where Sprite got the threadle. It killed me. And you can see her in the video, like, change her path. And I, you know, again, like, I've been working a lot with Sarah and she was like, you have to decel, like, her threadle is not there. You have to slow down to let her make the adjustment. And so I had stopped and I'm yelling in. And she's like, oh, okay. And so she like did this little like bloop of an in, and then I'm trying to push her out. But again, she's not so fast and sort of like twitchy that she curled into me. And so we were able to finish the course. And I mean, that was it. That was what made the difference for us. And so then we managed that. We managed to stay in third place at the end of the third day. So that meant we were going into the finals round for pentathlon, seated third. They took 50 dogs into the finals, which I would also say that's like, if they could take
a lot,
30% instead of 50% into the finals, like it would make the day a lot shorter. And, or if they said like minimum of X number of dogs, because again, so there were some of those classes that were so small where 50%, like they could have taken all the dogs into the finals and it still would have only been a few. So like the 16-inch class, that was kind of perfect that they took 50%. But it was a little brutal in the 20-inch class because they took 50 dogs into the finals. So we had to wait for 47 other dogs.
A long time.
The other thing I did was the day before, we technically made it into the games final. It was like, which that was also a weird final because it was based on snooker alone and then it was a gamble final. And so I made the choice not to run that course, which people were kind of surprised at. But, and again, I had no idea what the scoring was. So who knows? Maybe we had a wonderful chance at making it. We had made it through six in snooker with a fairly competitive opening, but we were like, I don't know, 20th or something like that. So I was like, well, we're not going to podium in games. And I was, these were long days, right? We had all the walkthroughs.
And it was hot and windy.
And it was hot. And that, well, and then it got cold, which that was the first day that it actually gotten cold. And we were staying to support some other friends who were running the games finals. But so I chose not to run and people thought I was kind of nuts. And I was like, why? I'm like, we're seated really well in pentathlon. We definitely have a chance to podium. Like, I'm going to put my eggs in that basket. And I don't love making up my own course. I do it. I'm not bad at it, but I don't love it. And so I chose to save like my mental energy, her physical and mental energy. And I did not run that games final the day before. So we go into like finals day. We're seated really far down in the pentathlon round. And so I had reached out to several people the day before. I talked to one of Sprite's littermates owners who's like been on several teams, and she was congratulating me on how well we were doing. And I asked her like, well, what's your plan? How do you mentally manage this? Because this was new for me. It was kind of an off goal that I had, was like mental management, right? I didn't have any goals for her. I had goals for me to be able to like handle an event like this. But this was not the type of mental management I was expecting to have to do, right? To be in this like super high pressure cooker situation. And so she had said, I like to watch about half the dogs and see if I need to make adjustments to my handling plan. Like, right, something that people thought would work and you watch like 10 dogs fail at it. And you're like, well, I'm not doing that. So I thought that was really good advice. And she also had talked about like, you know, walking out there with a timer and some of those kinds of things. And I was like, yeah, I'm not quite there yet. I reached out to Daisy Peel and she was kind of funny. She was just like, oh, finals are that's like the icing on the cake. Just do what you've been doing. Do the thing that you did to get into finals. And I think maybe she knew something more about the scoring than I did, because like that was the other thing I didn't understand, was like how high we needed to place in finals. At the Cups and the Classics, the final is usually like a winner takes all, right? You do the other four courses to get into the final. This was very different because it was fully cumulative over the five runs. So even going into the final, I still didn't understand how the scoring went. I just knew I wanted to run clean. And so that was the other piece of advice that I had gotten that was kind of separate from the event. I was doing a training day with Sarah Baker and we were working on the Agility World Championship finals course. And there was this one piece that I think was a little bit more condensed given the space that she had. And there was sort of like the optimal way to handle it. And there was the ever so slightly slower, but easier to execute way. And I was like, well, Sarah, what do you do? Like, what do you do? You're at the Agility World Championships. You're in the final round. How do you choose which way to handle? And she goes, well, it's funny because it's like every answer depends on your goals.
Mm-hmm.
Is your goal to run a clean finals round, or is your goal to win, right? That you absolutely want those extra 0.2 seconds. You want to win. And I was like, oh, okay. So I went into this going, I want to run a clean round. I kind of don't care if we win. In the back of my head, I thought as far as the scoring went, it wasn't necessarily about winning. I wanted to run clean. So I went through a whole gamut of emotions, wading through 47 dogs. This was the first time I'd ever employed headphones. Lots of other competitors do it. It is not something I normally do. I wore headphones during the walkthrough. I full on shouldered people out of the way when they were in my path. I was like, it's only 8 minutes. Like, there were so many people out there for our particular walkthrough. And it was also interesting. I was just watching, and that wasn't like overly intimidating, but I heard people, they were nattering behind me about this one particular jump before a tunnel and like how to handle it and what they thought was the fastest way. And they had smaller dogs and it wasn't as like important to me. And like, I couldn't handle it. It was like really grating on my nerves to hear them going on and on. And I finally just put my headphones back in and like sat in my chair and tried to be quiet and like breathe. So we got to the line. And I, like, the last kind of two dogs running, I was definitely, like, on the verge of hyperventilating. And I just tried to focus on her. And, you know, I kept just telling myself, like, do what we know we need to do. Do what we know we can do. And I particularly was going back and forth. Many, many people, almost, like, 98% of the people were handling the second jump as like a pseudo threadle. It was one of those like jumps that's really neither a threadle nor a push. It kind of depends on where you're handling it from. So I kept looking at it thinking like it's an easy threadle. It requires less of a side change. It's potentially a slightly more efficient path. And in the end, I was like, even though we've done well on our threadles through the weekend, I decided to handle it as a push to blind instead of a threadle. And then there was like it was jump, 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 no, jump, jump, tire, tunnel. And instead of tire, I think I said tunnel. And I was like, I'm losing it. I'm not like holding on to what I need to do. And she got into the tunnel and then it was tunnel A-frame. And I knew for the A-frame that either if I was ahead enough, I could handle it as a blind and feel okay. If I was behind it all, I wanted to handle it as a front cross. Again, even though it might be a little bit slower, that I knew I could more cleanly make sure she got to the proper side of the jump after the A-frame. And once I did that, I did the front cross. I was behind because I was all discombobulated. And after that, really, things went better. There was another spot on course where it was either you could handle a blind into like kind of to cover a tunnel entrance, or you could do a tunnel threadle with something that ate up a lot of teams. And even though I knew I wasn't going to be as head as I wanted to be, I decided to go for the blind cross and to push into the tunnel and to avoid the tunnel threadle, which was a skill we really hadn't tested over the weekend. And I just wasn't willing to test in finals. And so I was definitely late on that. It wasn't like as clean as it could have been. And then finally, we had to get through this weave pole entrance that was going to be hard for us. It was a steeplechase course, and so there were two sets of weaves. And the final set of weaves, it was like broad jump to weaves, soft-sided weave entry. Not a particularly strong skill for us, but not overly weak. And so I knew this was one of those like guide but don't overhandle situations. I knew if I pushed too hard on the weave poles, she would like pop out from the pressure. So I had to guide her to the correct entry without really like overhandling it. And when she hit that entry and made the turn, I was like, oh my God, we're going to do it. It was just like weaves, tunnel, jump.
Tunnel, like, jump.
That was it. That was it. That was all that was left. And the crowd went wild because, you know, she was going to run clean, basically. And it was super, super intense experience. We got through it clean. I still kind of didn't know if that was, like, great because we were slow compared to other dogs that in 36 seconds. We were at 42. I didn't understand the scoring, but I walked out. So I cried. First, I cried. I crouched behind a building and cried. And then I saw a very dear agility friend. He gave me a big fat hug, and I cried again. And so then I finally made it over to sort of like our group, and when everyone was being really great and congratulating me. And then there was this like gasp.
And you cried again.
No, well, it was a little misty. But there was a gasp from the crowd. And the first place competitor had gone off course and E'd. And so apparently, like, again, not understanding the scoring. That was the one thing you can't do. You can't E. It was pentathlon. Like, you can't E. And so somebody I didn't know, I still don't know who they were, she walked by and she kind of squeezed my shoulder ever so gently and said, "Congratulations, you just got second place." And I was like, "What? Okay." And so I was like desperately waiting for the finals results to be calculated. And so we did. We got second place at a national competition out of 117 dogs. And it was exhilarating and wholly, wholly unexpected. So it was quite the ride. And it was a really good experience into like leaning into the skills that we know we had and, you know, really trying to minimize our weaknesses, which we have. Don't get me wrong, we're slow, we don't have perfect weaves, we don't have a perfect dog walk, kind of just like you. So we just did our best. So it was interesting. Like, do you replicate that? Like, do you always try to go in with no expectations? Like, what I mean it's this like legit question that
I think that's a good question for another day, because I do think, you know, we were just talking about goal setting before this, and I think you and I sometimes set goals a little bit differently for our dogs or what we're focusing on training or whatever. And I don't know. It's a good question.
So,
but I'm very much looking forward to next year. I feel like next year I do have my sights set on a little higher goal. I would like to have some clean runs. I think in another year's time, I'm really excited to see maybe Ale and I can give you a run for your money for that second place spot.
Well, I mean, Ale's a lot faster, right? And so like, this is the thing, like,
she is.
I want to be really happy. It was just such a big deal. I took a lot of time off of work to do this. I took a lot of time away from my family. And they were watching on the live stream, and my husband sent me some very cute pictures of my boys, like watching the live stream. So it meant a lot to like come away with something to feel like all this time and effort that I put into this is worth
it. It's working.
It's working. It makes a difference. And so that was a really big deal for me. And then it's like, how are you planful in your next steps? Which I think brings us to a really good place. Like, Alyssa, what are our next steps for this podcast? Kind of like, where are we looking to go? What's it going to look like in 2023 for Canine Hijinks?
It's a good question, and one that I don't think we actually have a full answer to.
Yeah.
In part, there's some endeavors that we're after that we can't quite talk about yet that might be taking up an awful lot of time. And in large part because we are starting to get to a point, I think, with both girls where we're really having some good goals and big goals and have some big competitions coming up. And then I have a puppy who is going to be slower to get to that point, I think, in large part because of what I'm focusing on. But of course, it means I'm training two dogs, and that takes a lot of effort. So I think what we're probably going to see is a little less frequency from us here for a little while.
Yeah. So I think really before the end of the year, we'd kind of like to talk to you all about goal setting and what we think about that. So I am not entered in anything for the rest of the year aside from the European Open team tryouts. So I have all my travel plans made for getting to Pennsylvania. Sprite is qualified. She's entered. We're going to make our first flight. And so that's our main focus. We have some homework from the Open. We have some homework from some of these courses that we've been doing at Alyssa's place and other places that we've been working on. And that is a huge focus for me. I'm trying to figure out what my goals are. I didn't really get to talk about it here, but Fractal has kind of like come back out of nowhere and is still competitive at 8 years old. And so I'm really trying to think about how I give him his due for at least a year, right? And his kind of like 9-year-old in 2023, mm-hmm. that would be the last year I would expect probably to really take him to a national competition. So that might shift things. So I have a whole lot up in the air for me, like between what happens at EO tryouts, how well Fractal is doing. And so like, I don't know what my plans are. So I'm excited to talk to everybody about like goal setting. I'm really excited about everybody who has come up to me pretty recently and told me how much they enjoy the podcast. Like that means a lot to me. Mm-hmm. So like, thank you.
We even had some at West Coast Open that mentioned it. That was really fun.
Yeah. Shout out Rebecca Polly. Hey, lady. Thanks for chatting with us. And
which does lead me to say that if you really like the podcast, it would help us out a ton if you would share it.
Correct. Yes. So that'd make a huge difference. Like if this is content that you would want to see continued, like please share the podcast, please shout us out to your friends, or let us know what specifically you like about the podcast so that we can make more content about that. We kind of think maybe mm-hmm. that we have more of an agility audience than what was we necessarily intended, but we're not sure. So if you all could let us know, that would be great. So before the end of 2023, I expect to come back with a recap episode for the European Open tryouts, team tryouts, and to let you all know, like, how am I thinking about goal setting for 2023? What is Alyssa thinking about goal setting for 2023? We're in different situations, but we both have two dogs that, as I said ad nauseum at the beginning of this episode, two dogs really complicates things. And there are a lot mm-hmm. of reasons to run two dogs. There are reasons not to run two dogs. So we certainly have some conversations that we can have there. But beyond that, we don't really have any plans. So let us know what you would like to see so that if we are to present more infrequent content, that we can make it really, really impactful and meaningful for you.
So that's all for today's episode. Don't forget to rate, share, and subscribe to our podcast so you can join us for our next episode. In the meantime, you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, or by visiting our website at www.caninehijinks.com.
Thanks for joining us. Make sure to go out and have some fun with your dogs. Talk to you next time.